They put 62 years of discriminatory legislation only for Chinese people. It's hatred. It's legislated racism. I mean, people ask me, well, how did it affect you? I said, well, I'm still trying to figure it out. What did we do besides being the wrong color of skin?
Osgoode Hall in downtown Toronto is the seat of justice in Canada's largest and richest city, a place where momentous arguments are spoken and righteous decisions written. Today, in one of the public meeting rooms, some people are discussing a story that is just beginning to wind its way through the courts of the land. There are about 60 people here. They talk partly in Chinese, but mostly in English. There are old men and women, stooped and gray-haired, but also some young people with baggy pants and t-shirts. The old listen with nodding heads, recognizing the stories they have lived. The young listen with chin in hand, still a bit bewildered by stories that seem to come from another time and place.
In 1948, he became a citizen. He wasn't allowed to become a citizen until 1947. The Exclusion Act wasn't repealed.
The people here today are generally not the Chinese Canadians with the big homes in the suburbs, the recently arrived wealthy families from Hong Kong. These Chinese Canadians started coming to Canada more than a century ago. They came with nothing, and many today still do not have a lot, except memories that will not fade.
The people here today are the descendants of the wave of immigration that came in the late 1800s to build the Canadian Pacific Railway. And they came as part of a coolie trade, indentured labor, almost akin to slavery. My name is Mei Chang. I'm a lawyer, and in my spare time, I am the president of the Chinese Canadian National Council. I managed to live my whole life, go through a law career, study immigration law, and I had no idea about the head tax. It was a shock to me. It's a real black mark on Canada's history. This history begins with the construction of the Canadian Pacific Railway when very large numbers of Chinese workers, as many as 15,000, were brought to Canada. And in fact, John A. Macdonald said you had to have Chinese labor or you could not have the railway.
The Chinese are coming to Canada for exactly the same reasons as other immigrants coming to Canada, for a better life for themselves and for their families. My name is William Gainwee Deer. I'm presently working at Canadian National Railways. I'm an engineer. The Chinese see Canada as the gold mountain, the land of opportunity. There was employment to build the Canadian Pacific Railway.
They were paid half of what white workers were paid, and the most dangerous portions of the rail were laid by the Chinese, particularly blasting through the Fraser Canyon. One of the interesting anecdotes, if I could put it that way, is the railway apparently saved about $5 million by using Chinese labor.
In 1885, the last spike is being driven on the Canadian Pacific Railway. Canada opens its doors to 79,000 immigrants that year, but only some kinds of immigrants. With the railway done, the political classes of the day fear that the Chinese will stay, and more of their family and friends may come. They will surely take the same jobs Anglo-Saxons covet. It matters not that an estimated 1,500 Chinese died in the building of a railway to unite the country. 4 dead Chinese for every mile of track they laid. It is a sign of things to come that in the famous image of driving the last golden spike, there is not one Chinese worker in the picture.
All spikes but the last, a poem by F.R. Scott. Where are the coolies in your poem, Ned? Where are the thousands from China who swung their picks with bare hands at 40 below?
Between the first and the million other spikes they drove, and the dressed-up act of Donald Smith, who has sung their story? Did they fare so well in the land they helped to unite? Did they get one of the 25 million CPR acres? Is all Canada has to say to them written in the Chinese Immigration Act?
In 1885, the first piece of legislation called the Chinese Immigration Act was passed, and it imposed a $50 head tax on any Chinese person wishing to remain in Canada. There was then a debate in the House of Commons.
With reference to this Chinese matter, I simply rise to express my pleasure at the prospects the people of British Columbia have of being relieved of the scourge they have been suffering
under. Chinatown is a terrible cancer in the very heart of Victoria and must be removed, whatever may be the cost, before it spreads itself over the whole of our fair city.
I share very much the feeling against the Mongolian or Chinese population in our country as permanent settlers.
John A. Macdonald believed that the Asians would always remain foreigners.
I believe they would not be a wholesome element for this country. I believe that it is an alien race in every sense that would not and could not be expected to assimilate with our Aryan population.
And so the head tax was imposed with the result that some significant number of the Chinese population went back to China and others paid the head tax, and it significantly decreased the flow of new immigrants from China.
In the final decades of the 1800s, Canadian immigration officials are having some success in keeping the Chinese out, and more success in attracting the kind of immigrants they want. The Dominion Lands Act grants a quarter section of free land, 160 acres, to any settler able to pay a $10 registration fee and live on the section for 3 years. There is no land for the Chinese who helped build the CPR, so they travel the same track to look for opportunities across the country.
If you go through the Canadian prairies, at every major CPR station, you would have a Chinese cafe. And it's a special blend of Chinese-Canadian food, which is actually Chinese-Canadian food. That's what it is. Because of the lack of status that the Chinese had, the Chinese do not have the right to become citizens. They do not have the right to vote. So jobs were very restrictive. So what can you do? You have a good pair of hands. You got a strong back. You work as a laborer in the farm fields in the interior of BC, in the fish canneries, as a houseboy, as a restaurant worker. The Chinese did women's work. They did work that nobody else wanted to do, washing dishes, washing dirty clothes. You have the churches lined up against the Chinese immigration. You had the trade unions. You had the big business. You have little business. And then the general population. So there was a tax on rice. In Vancouver, Chinese kids could not go to the same schools as European kids. In Quebec, there's the tax on laundries. Whatever legislation that is needed to prevent the Chinese from completely integrating into Canadian society. But the Chinese people are very resourceful. They're able to borrow money in the villages or borrow money from overseas acquaintances, and they still manage to come over here.
The immigration flow started to rise again, such that in 1900, the question came up again in the House of Commons.
There's not much room for the Chinaman in Canada. He displaces a good Canadian or a good British subject. Not only are they monopolizing the laundry business and the growing of vegetables in British Columbia, they are driving skilled miners out of employment.
We have a right, as every other people inhabiting a country have, to object to the introduction among our population of any race whom we may consider hopelessly barbarian or not capable of assimilating with our population. I have no doubt personally that it would be much better for this country if no Chinese ever came.
One thing that was touching when I read the debates was to see that there were some MPs that actually felt what the government was doing was wrong, and in particular I recall Mr. Christie.
I hold that this measure is not in accordance with our free, liberal institutions in Canada. Nay, more, it is not in harmony with our Christian civilization. It is both unjust and un-British.
But on the other hand, you had the Prime Minister of the day, Wilfrid Laurier, saying the Chinese were completely undesirable as immigrants. And as citizens of Canada.
The province is flooded with an undesirable class of people. There is probability of a grave injury being caused to the working classes by the large influx of laborers from China. the capitation tax should be raised to $500.
And so it is in 1903. Meanwhile, in the years up to the First World War, almost 3 million immigrants make their way to Canada. 80% of them are from Britain, the United States, and continental Europe. None but the Chinese pay the $500 head tax. And at the time, $500 can purchase 2 houses in downtown Vancouver or Toronto. The Chinese are, in a way, paying for the free land handouts to other immigrants.
Chong, he come from Hong Kong, where Chinese man play holiday on a drum.
I came across this song, and it was at the beginning of the 1900s. It's from a book of racist folk songs. And there was a section on the Chinese, there were sections on the other immigrants. And one of these songs is called Chong from Hong Kong.
Chong, go back to Hong Kong. Teachy peachy American song all day long to his China girl in old Hong Kong.
You know, that was the feeling at the time. You know, the Chinese are heathens, they're dirty, and we can pick on them quite easily because we were, you know, simple peasants, not educated. So fighting back was totally unheard of. We accepted our fate.
My name is James Wing. I'm a Chinese, came from Canton province. I think I'm 90. I came to Canada at age 10. I landed in Victoria, but that time they sent me from Victoria to Vancouver. They kept me in a house for 2 weeks, shot in there, with some other boys of my age, teenager. They said, we'll bring the food, put it on the floor, and they bought no chair, we'll sit on the floor and eat it. And they bring some and lunch, they bring the bread, the bowl of sugar, that's all. They keep Chinese until they pay head tax. If they pay the $500, they be released.
I used to open the big steamer trunk in our little apartment above the restaurant, and there'd be this head tax certificate. And over the top, it says the Dominion of Canada. It says Li Fu, whose photograph is attached here too. The sum of $500 being the head tax due under the provision of the Chinese Immigration Act. And there's a case number, C.4, number 48656, and signed by G.L. Milne, Controller of Chinese Immigration, July 4th, 1913. This is my dad's head tax certificate. My name's Yu Lee. I think for my father, he saw a lot of hope in Canada. One saying he used to say was, the dogs here eat better than people at home.
I'd hear my father work in a restaurant, and he sell a hamburger, fry, and steak. The Chinese, you know, it's not Chinese meal you see today. They didn't like the Chinese. Chinese was called discriminated by the people here due to culture, language, color. When I went to school, all the kids, they hate, you know, they don't like me, don't like us, don't want to associate, and some bully us. Well, ching, 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 China man, and sing in the street like that, you know.
Don't worry, leave me alone.
Ching, 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 China man, getting out of bed.
My father, he said that the only way he learned English was that he would ask for a nickel from the boss to go to church, and he would go to church twice or three times on Sunday. And he told me it was to learn English. But looking back now, as a not a child anymore, I think it had something to do with wanting to belong. Excuse me. He was amongst many, many old Chinese guys who lived alone, went to these small towns in Canada, opened a little restaurant, never got invited to any homes of people that ate at those restaurants. I thought that he was reaching out by going to church.
Chinky Chinaman, chinky chinky Chinaman, chinky chinky Chinaman, sitting on a fence. Tries to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
In 1923, there was another debate in the House of Commons.
Thus rid the country of a whole lot of Chinamen and do ourselves a good turn. In South Africa, the people are talking of segregating the Chinese. That may have to be done yet in British Columbia, for the two races should not be brought together.
The head tax was finally repealed, but it was replaced by a piece of legislation that virtually halted Chinese immigration into Canada, and it completely prevented the reunification of families. The Exclusion Act was passed on Canada Day, July 1st, 1923, and many Chinese refer to that day, to Canada Day, as Humiliation Day.
By 1923, the Canadian government has collected $23 million from 81,000 Chinese head taxpayers. In comparison, the government's cash outlay for the CPR was only $25 million. For the next two decades, under the Chinese Exclusion Act, as few as 25 Chinese, mostly diplomats and rich businessmen, will be let into Canada. James Wing, the 10-year-old, makes it in just under the wire to join his father in Montreal. But most are without family. The fathers of Bill Deere and Yu Li live in bachelor communities of lonely men, while the women they have wed live half a world away.
I think that the story of the women, like my mother, who were prevented from coming to Canada by the Chinese Exclusion Act, is a far more sadder tale than those of the men. My mother is 91 now.
Chiu Kunying, Hui Hin, Hian Gong.
My name is Chiu Kunying. I'm from Huiping, Guangdong Province in China. My husband, he came to Canada in 1913. It was 1930 by the time he paid off the interest on the head tax. It was, we paid many times over, many multiples of $500 at that time. He had to borrow money to come back to China. It was 1931 or 1932. My husband and I were arranged by what is called a blind marriage in China. It's pre-arranged. My husband stayed a year, long enough for me to be pregnant with my first child, but we were very poor. He had to borrow money to come back to Canada. He did that before my child was born.
Because of the laws surrounding the head tax, you could not be outside of Canada for a period of more than 2 years. So many of these men fathered children, but were not able to stick around for the child's birth even, and then had to come back to Canada and then eventually save up enough money to take another trip to China.
He came back 2 or 3 years later, and I became pregnant with my second child, and he left a month after he was born. And after that, war broke out with Japan, and it rained bombs. The ground was littered with bodies. She says a lot of people changed their spouses during that time. There were many of my friends, women who were married to people who were in Canada. They couldn't wait. I was told I was crazy to wait. I did not get one letter. There was no communication at all with my husband in those 14 years. He sent back no money.
Don't play bingo tonight, Mother. Stay home with Daddy and me. Don't play bingo tonight, Mother. We need your company.
1947. The war is over. The baby boom has begun. And Ottawa is embarrassed. Some Chinese Canadians fought for Canada in the war, even though they could not vote. So Ottawa decides to repeal the Exclusion Act. For the first time, Chinese are allowed to work as pharmacists, lawyers, and accountants. They can become citizens. Yu Li's father signs on right away in 1948. James Wing takes out his naturalization papers in 1951. And Bill Deere recalls the reunification, how new families have to be made.
You know, both my parents were separated for, they were married in 23, they were reunited in 56, so that's over 30 years. And so my father and my mother reunited in the early 50s. So imagine trying to get to know each other all over again. They were married in their early 20s, and they were reunited in their 50s.
When I arrived in Sudbury,
I must say that I was very disappointed. I wanted to get back on the plane and go back home right away. It was January, I think, of 1950. We had a small restaurant in Sudbury that served miners.
Capital Cafe.
It was called the Capital Cafe. Chinese and Canadian food. I worked. I washed dishes. We were paying off all the money we owed to come here.
We didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it because I was unaware of the situation. And for my father and my grandfather, I can only surmise that it was a shameful period. Not just shameful, but it was painful. They were from the generation where they endured. So they endured most of their lives. So why talk about these things? Because they felt that they were totally helpless in trying to effect any change.
We now have a charter which defines the kind of country in which we wish to live and guarantees the...
In 1982, Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau is repatriating the Constitution and bringing in a new Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Canada is accepting 121,000 immigrants that year. Leading countries of birth still include the United Kingdom and the United States, but also on the list are Vietnam, India, the Philippines, Guyana, El Salvador, and China and Hong Kong.
Individuals and minorities do not feel protected against the possibility of the tyranny of the majority. It is useless to ask them to open their hearts and minds to their fellow Canadians.
In the months afterwards, some elderly Chinese begin to explore the human rights violations they suffered in the past. The Chinese Canadian National Council finds 4,000 former head taxpayers still alive. They begin a campaign seeking redress.
We want an official apology from the government. We've never had that. We also want symbolic return of the $23 million that was taken from the Chinese. And the Chinese Canadians who paid the head tax should be individually compensated for those payments.
Acknowledge the injustices of the Chinese head tax. And
we were successful in having the matter raised in the House of Commons as many as over 30 times.
I've now prepared a report which the government is considering.
But